If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at MixingMusicPodcast.com/exclusive. Welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK. With me, as always, is the lovely Lou with the fro.
The one true Lou fro.
Nice. This is actually take two. We started a take, and it was just going poorly. We had some technical difficulties, so we're going to get into it. This episode is actually suggested by a podcast listener, Alex Dukas, or Dukas. Hi, DK. Longtime listener, first-time contactor. I'm a massive fan of the show, and I was wondering if you might do another show on computers and computer needs for mixing, producing, recording, and maybe video editing. I've listened to the last one from about 2021 or earlier a bunch of times. I'm sure the audience would love some tips on choosing a machine, what's important in a spec, you know, maybe fan noise, memory bandwidth, external hard drive, CPU core count, clock speed. Thanks for all you do. Thanks for listening to the show, Alex, and for suggesting this episode. That's awesome. Any of you can do that via Discord or just emailing me. But anyway, let's get into this episode. Real fast, we're just going to blast through what we talked about in the first take and then we're re-recording. We're talking about OS systems right now. Linux, Windows, Mac OS. Without a doubt, when it comes to music, especially that you will, when you are expecting or you are constantly in positions where collaboration is important, sharing files, sending sessions, working between different devices locally, you need to get Mac. We had a long talk about this before on the first take, and I think we should just end it there. You need a Mac. AirDrop is worth its weight in gold for like local file sharing. And then on top of that, there's like different encryptions, FAT32 we talked about for hard drives and files and stuff. Permissions are different. It's just not worth getting a Windows computer at all for collaboration.
Once again, if you're just working by yourself, if you are very isolated in your workflow, like nobody comes into your studio and all that, use whatever you want to use at that point. But if you're going to work in a creative field where collaboration is a big deal, like let's say you do recording for writers camps, you're a mixing engineer where clients like to sit in and all that, and sometimes files need to be transferred back and forth between like producer adding new sections or whatever, just save yourself the headache of not being compatible. It's the same reason we actually, it's funny enough, while on tour, we convinced the DJ he needs to buy an iPhone. Not because iPhones are better. It's just that every time we wanted to send him something and we needed him to send us something, AirDrop was not available. And it was an almost daily issue when it came to like, you know, because we're updating show files and all that kind of stuff. We're sending each other different videos and all that. Listen, at a certain point, it's just easier to be compatible. And it's probably safer for your job at the end of the day, too.
Right. Remove pride for a second from any heavy Android or Windows user. Remove pride for a second. It's like the cost difference of Windows to Mac is not enough to justify the loss of features for Windows, especially in our industry. If you are at all in a field of collaboration, if you're constantly collaborating, or even if you're not even constantly collaborating, but you're expecting to collaborate once a year even. I have an iPhone 16e. I probably paid $300 for it. It's going to last me forever. It's an awesome phone. I got an M2 Mac Studio like 2022 or something like that. And it's not even, I've never, oh, 2023. I've never... It's like by far the best computer I've ever had. And I've had a fully specced out, maxed out trash can Apple Pro, Mac Pro from 2019.
What was it? Like you could do like a 2 or 4 terabyte drive? You could do 128 gigs of RAM. Like what was it? 12 cores. Yeah.
I maxed it out. And it's still not even comparable to the silicon chips now, like the Apple chips now. So... It's competitive enough that the cost no longer makes Macs like something to talk about. It's like, oh, Macs are so much more expensive. No, because the Mac Mini, which up until the recent inflation of like memory sticks was like $500-$600.
It was so affordable.
And that was the best, like that was probably the best value computer for a music producer ever in the history of mankind up until this point.
Yeah.
Like that was, yeah. And then now it's like $700. So it's still a fantastic deal.
And you know why they like ran out, right? Aside from like chips being harder to source.
No, tell me about it.
Okay, so Mac Mini base model, M4 base model, just 256 drive, 16 gigs of RAM that it came with, was the number one computer people were buying to use for local AI servers. Like if you wanted ultimate privacy while training your own AI and all that, the Mac Mini base model M4 was the most recommended computer for running a local server. And they got bought out so much that they couldn't keep up with demand and the need for the chips and everything. It wasn't necessarily that they couldn't get enough chips for their processors. No, it was literally the hard drives, which is kind of the big issue right now. SSD drives are getting more expensive, this and that. So the 256 hard drive model is what got discontinued. The base model is now a 512. That's why they got more expensive. So it's not that the chips actually got any more expensive. It's just they can't source a 256 as much as they need to right now. Yeah, but that computer is so good. Just the base model alone, what was only $600 less if you had a Costco membership, was so good already. It was the number one recommended small computer to run AI.
So, yeah, Mac Mini, I'm not talking about the M1 or M2 where it's like flat.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the one that's M4 where it's like slightly...
It's a little bigger of a sandwich, thicker. You know, a little bigger
it's
sandwich.
It's still small though. Oh my goodness. The only downside to the Mac Mini is that there might not be enough USB-C ports.
I have contested that one successfully because, something we were talking about before, like whether to go a laptop or not. On tour, I was running two displays that I bought at Costco. Asus makes those little travel portable ones. Just one USB-C cable to it, right? Mm-hmm. If you just have one powered USB hub, you know, just for running hard drives, things like that, use them on your screens if you need to and whatever. But like you have five Thunderbolt ports on it. They're not USB. They're Thunderbolt. All of them are Thunderbolt. So you can power multiple screens or devices with just one Thunderbolt port. Like you can daisy chain that thing. So
right.
The five is enough. It's got more than a MacBook Pro does. And it's one third the price.
Right. Talking about MacBook Pros, I'm not a fan of buying any computers with the screen because you're paying a lot for the screen.
Yeah.
Right. So unless, here's the exception. If you are constantly traveling, like I know producers where their job every day, especially in LA, they go to different studios every day to collaborate with different artists every day.
Yep.
If that's the case, get a screen, you know, get a MacBook Pro. If you're traveling all the time, and maybe I know a lot of engineers that have the ability to have a home computer, which is a desktop of some kind, and then they have like a traveling computer with the same exact plugins, but it's like a MacBook. You know, that's fine. If money's not an option, then get both. But I would not recommend getting a laptop as your main driver if you're not traveling often.
Like the only reason I have a laptop is because, once again, back to the traveling thing, I do a lot of traveling. And for me, it's a lot of like tight spaces sometimes, you know, like if you're on a festival or something, there's not going to be a lot of space for every engineer to have a full desktop computer with them. You know, sometimes you just have a little corner table or whatever that you had to set up on. Totally cool for that. But is it my main computer? Not really.
So, I mean, if you want to travel too, like if you have a Mac Mini or a Mac Studio, I have a nice D'Addario backpack that's actually made for touring guitars, musicians, and it's got a bunch of compartments. It's like a non-traditional backpack. It's like heavier duty, thicker coat, outer shell.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's got a bunch of small compartments rather than like one big bag area. one big compartment. And I use that. I put my Mac Studio in the bottom, and I have a 16-inch portable bus-powered display, which, by the way, $100 or less at Costco, even cheaper mm-hmm. on Amazon. 16 inches is the larger Mac Pro display size.
Mm-hmm.
And I just need one outlet. I plug in this portable display into my computer. I plug the computer into the wall, and now I have a traveling setup, right?
Yeah.
I put my keyboard and my mouse in the backpack. I put all the cables in the backpack. I need to put my headphones in the backpack anyway, or any other device interface if I need to, right, in the backpack. I'm gonna have to travel with a backpack anyway if you have a Mac, like, a MacBook Pro, right? So I don't travel enough to justify getting a MacBook. Having a Mac Mini, having a Mac Studio, and traveling with, and having just like a cheap portable display, totally awesome. Fantastic. Yeah. And that's what I do. And I highly recommend that. You get the best bang for buck as far as like processing goes. We, on the last episode, we talked about like CPU core count and clocking speeds and stuff, mm-hmm. like whatever gigahertz. And we just talked about, it's not necessarily the core count, the number of cores, but rather the speed of each individual core. Is that still true?
That's still true. So depending on the software you're on, for instance, like I think it's Pro Tools, that is like, if you look at like how it uses all your cores in an active session, you'll notice that there's dominant cores and then there's like cores that just don't get used, right? Other softwares like Logic are a lot more efficient with it. Then again, Logic was designed by Apple for Apple, and it only works on Apple. So it makes the best use out of your cores. But on a lot of computers, they're processor is usually based off of a single core speed, and that's the one they market to you with. But when you look at multi-core speeds, like when they're actually in use in sequence with each other, what is the average and all that, that's your true core speed. But some programs will only use one core, while other programs will use multiple cores. So Pro Tools is a multi-core program, but how efficiently it uses all those cores is a different story compared to, once again, let's say Logic. Like when you load up a virtual instrument, you're using cores. You're not using RAM. Plugins are using RAM.
No. Virtual instruments is RAM. I was about to bring that up.
No, yeah. But you use it RAM for the plugin side of it, but the actual processing of the sound engine and everything is not RAM.
Yeah, sorry. The sound samples are stored for immediate access via the RAM.
Exactly.
So if you pull up like a piano keyboard plugin, the actual samples that it's pulling from is stored in the RAM.
Exactly. But if you're using something like a synthesizer where it's not based off of sample, but rather an engine, then that engine is your core.
Right. And same thing with like any sort of mixing. I don't know 100% on that. That sounds about right.
But mixing plugins, like stuff, preset files, like when you change your settings, each one of those gets stored onto your RAM. But obviously, like changing a setting isn't going to use all your RAM. But like the more plugins you have and the more settings you change, it's more little instances of data in the RAM. So it can pile up. But that, once again, we're talking about when you start using a fuck ton of plugins.
So I can't confirm or deny that. I have no idea. But I do know that when I'm mixing and all of the other of my colleagues were producing, for me, RAM has never been an issue. 16 gigs of RAM is fine for mixing. 32 gigs of RAM is like overkill and has a lot of headroom for mixing stuff, like with all my mixing plugins.
Mm-hmm.
As far as like producing, I remember like if you didn't have enough RAM, then you couldn't run some like East-West sounds, or like you couldn't run different sample-based
Contact
production.
Was the big one that everybody had
virtual
an issue with. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was multiple libraries and then some of them were sample-based, some of them weren't and all that. And then your graphics processor then played into it because Contact is still its own thing entirely, but like sometimes you get some really intense graphics with some of these virtual instruments. Like, and Native Instruments was really big on like not only making like creative tools, but really aesthetic tools too.
Right. The point that I'm trying to make though is like even whatever parts of plugin processing takes up RAM as far as like mixing and recording goes, it's never enough where even if you totally stack a computer, it's going to be a big issue with 16 or 32 gigs of RAM.
Yeah.
Whereas if you are a producer, especially a composer, RAM will be significant, like not significantly, but maybe a bigger consideration than core count. alone, right? So that's something to consider. But again, as audio engineers, I have three virtual instruments. I don't care. And I have enough RAM. I think like 16
we're using maybe
gigs
a Harmony engine, you know?
Yeah, 16 gigs is fine. And there's been so many tests of people using that M4 Mac Mini where it's like, it's only got 16 gigs of RAM and totally runs fine. Dude, these Apple chips are incredible.
So I won't say who, because they, okay. We all know people who are like super computer nerds and all that, but I have one that specifically makes money in that. But he even said, he's like, you know, it's kind of my job to hate on other brands and like try to compete with it, this and that. But when the Mac Mini came out and me and him both bought one, him to test one, me to actually, before I bought my MacBook Pro, I bought a Mac Mini. And the only reason I bought a MacBook Pro was just too many issues at TSA. They kept breaking my keyboards of all things, but, which was a whole issue when I got into town and my keyboard doesn't work. Dude, I kid you not. He's like, dude, it's kind of getting harder to build these computers for people because of how good and how affordable it is. Like when you got somebody who builds custom computers for a living, saying that, like, it's a pretty interesting time we're in where things are getting more expensive. Access to certain resources are now being very limited to the point where certain brands just won't sell to consumers anymore because there's more money in selling B2B. But it's an interesting time to say that 16 gigs is enough, because at a certain point, everybody was arguing that 16 gigs is not, especially with, I don't know what they call it. I'm just going to call it adaptive RAM. The thing that Apple's been doing, I'm sure at some point Intel and other companies have figured this out, but you can use part of your hard drive if you're running out of RAM, and it'll convert some of your hard drive into RAM.
I've never heard of that.
Dude, yeah, check it out. I'll look it up just to get the exact wording of it. But when I heard about that, I was like, wait, how does it do it? And then I started like trying to push. I bought the M4 Pro, being that I really liked what the M4 was already doing for the laptop. And I got to say, I ran Ozone 12, 7 instances of it, and it didn't crash Pro Tools. And Ozone, usually, once you throw that thing in, your computer's already like stretching to breathe.
Right.
So the fact that it did that, I was extremely impressed. But then again, I haven't pushed it to its limit yet. I haven't like loaded one of my sessions that I have on my main computer onto it and see how that works. I just haven't wanted to install and register all the plugins again.
Yeah. I will say, just to be clear, just to remove any form of bias here, just to be clear, I have both Windows and Mac in my home.
Same.
I usually build everything myself, including my coffee machine I've modified and everything. But this is the one thing that I could have made myself, but I actually bought pre-made for me. I did customize it, but it is pre-made for me, was my Windows gaming PC. I use that all the time for playing games and doing other non-work related stuff. I grew up using Windows. Windows is great. I have no issues with it. It's just, again, it comes down to collaboration. That's just what it comes down to. Collaboration and file sharing, Mac is superior. And then that doesn't even include how like Pro Tools is more optimized for Mac. This is just, we're not even going to get into it. So like, I know that if you're like an Apple hater, that's fine. Mm-hmm. It's okay to be iconoclastic about it. Just if other people are going to be entering the studio, expect to waste hours of time trying to troubleshoot what's going on and why things don't work.
Yeah.
All right, you found it.
I just found
it.
Yeah, so they call it swap RAM. So just to give you the verbatim of what I'm reading, it says, yes, your Mac, when your Mac runs low on actual RAM, it actually uses a portion of your internal storage drive, the SSD, as extra virtual memory. This technique is called swap memory. How it works: memory compression. Before moving data to the hard drive, macOS aggressively squeezes or compresses inactive data in your RAM to free up space. Now, there is a catch, and it's a performance catch. It is going to be at a slower speed. An SSD is very fast, but it's still significantly slower than actual RAM. And then there is wear and tear to your drive. Continually writing and rewriting swap data from your hard drive causes wear on the internal storage. While modern Mac drives are rated for many years of use, heavy swapping over time will degrade the total lifespan of the drive. So is it the best replacement? No, but is it there to actually support you when you need a little more RAM in your session? Yeah, totally. And maybe that's part of why we're seeing a lot of people saying that 16 gigs is enough, because the few times that you need a little more, it's kind of backing you up a little.
All right. So just to recap, we talked about Mac versus Windows, collaboration, file sharing. We've talked about
the different
Macs now, Apple Silicone, swap RAM. We've talked about a bunch of different stuff. Honestly, I think that's like kind of the entire episode, really. Like, we used to be at a point where the bottleneck of audio production was computer specs. But now, I mean, unless you get the cheapest Mac, let me look it up. I don't even know what it is right now.
Cheapest Mac is going to be like $799? Oh, well, here's the thing about the Neo. I don't know if you've checked it out, but the Neo works like an iPad laptop. Like it's not even on the M, is it on the M processor? I don't think it's on the M processor.
Let me look it up. I'm trying to look it up.
Yeah. It's an interesting product because it's supposed to be not supposed to replace the MacBook Air.
Bless me.
Bless you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I don't see what processor it uses. It's actually kind of not, doesn't say, which is a little scary.
Yeah.
I have to look it up. I have to go deeper. But anyway, yeah, don't get the, but it's the same price. The MacBook Neo is the same price as the Mac Mini.
Figured it out. Point. It's the Apple A18 Pro chip, which is the same as the iPad Pro.
Right.
Yeah.
It's an iPad chip in a computer, which is fine. And I'm
which
sure it
says
work
a
well.
Lot about the iPad.
I'm sure that there's tests online that'll show you, but it's the same price of a Mac Mini, and Mac Mini is just so much better. So just get the Mac Mini and get a cheap display, a portable 16-inch display at Costco or wherever, buy it used. Anyway, that's kind of that. Oh, I was going to talk about, like, now these are things that how we do it. And things that are not necessarily like objectively better or something like that. So for example, for me, I have never needed to get more than 500 gigs of RAM. I spend about 300 to 350 gigs of RAM on like plugins and just software that everything runs on. All of my sessions are on external drives. Any samples that I use for triggering or just samples in general are on my external drive. Audio files are on my external drive. If I download anything, I copy those files into my external drive, and then I delete and clear my trash can. So I've never needed more than 500 gigs. I'm sure some people have never needed more than 250. I just personally have never needed more than 500. As far as RAM size, I think I'm currently running 32. Never had an issue. And that's half the RAM that I used to have with my MacBook. My trash can, my Mac Pro trash can. The one thing that I do use that I think I do recommend, it's like $10 a month, is something called Backblaze. And that's for the year-long backup. So like all of my hard drives, so I have a subscription to Backblaze. It's an app that runs in the background. And all it does is I select the external drives or even the internal drives, including my Time Machine, for which ones I want to constantly back up. And those are automatically backed up to the cloud, like clones of those hard drives. So every time That's that cool. I run a session and I add new audio files because of the recordings, or like I import new audio files and change the hard drive, add new files to the hard drive, it automatically adds those files to that cloud. And then I can pay money for me to recover if I ever need to. I can recover it in a zip file for free. I can recover it on a hard drive or external hard, like a hard drive or a USB thumb drive for a small cost, et cetera. But it just backs up all of my files. It just takes a few days of leaving my computer running to back up all my files. And as far as like how I back up my files locally, I have my 500 to 1 terabyte SSD that I run all my sessions on. Yes, SSD is important for running sessions if you want to have no hangups while recording, writing, reading, writing, and files onto the hard drive. But I also have a backup drive where I store all of my Time Machines, and I sometimes I'll use the same SSD for a couple years, and then I'll clear the SSD, move that entire one up to 500 gigs or 1 terabyte of memory onto my backup drive, and then I just start over the SSD for the next year. And then that backup drive is 4 to 10 terabytes. It's usually around 4 to 6 terabytes. And then I replace all of my hard drives at least once every year or three, up to 3 years. I rarely ever go past 2 years ever for any drives, just in case. That's just kind of how I do things. Lou, do you have any comments on
that? So what I've done is on my end, I have, I think it's a 14 terabyte. In fact, I'm going to double check that because I recently had to do like a massive recatalog, like backup. Yeah. Okay. So I did a 14 terabyte drive spinning disk, 7200 RPM. Reason I chose spinning disk for the backup, I'm sure you already know. SSDs, they are extremely hard to recover. And by extremely hard, I usually... I say that to say that most techs that I know, when they hear an SSD goes out, they just refuse it. It's not that they can't do it. They just refuse to put the time into it because it's not going to go well. And usually they can only restore like so much of it. But then like the way it works is you might be missing data, which now makes the file like, yeah, it's there, but it's a corrupted file. With spinning disks, it's quite a bit easier for them to restore things. So if this 14 terabyte does go down, then, you know, $200-$300 gets me a new one. And the guy I go to has been able to restore every single spinning disk drive I've ever brought to him. So I'm confident in my backup choice of that. But here's the thing about 7200 RPMs. It's a fuck ton slower than an SSD. So I would never work off of that. At one point when I was in college, teachers would say, hey, you're going to want 7200 RPM minimum. And at that time, I think it was LaCie and one other company was like leading the game. G Drive. Right. And so this was like FireWire days and all that. So G Drive had their like really, really portable one, which was really popular for a lot of people with MacBook Pros with the FireWire connection to it. And LaCie was very, very popular for anybody that was doing like commercial stuff because it was big. The power supply was bigger than your hand kind of thing. But nowadays you can get away with like a simple, what do they call it? The SanDisk Extreme Go. Or you can get like the LaCie portable rugged ones that look like an orange bumper surrounds the thing. They're so fast nowadays that you can make any of those work. But as far as backups go, if you want a safe backup, 7200 RPM is a good safe place. And the reason the SSDs, once again, are just a little bit harder is just that the way it's encrypted, it just kind of finds random free space and it doesn't always do things linear, unlike a spinning disk. So when you're backing things up, go the DK route with the cloud. I don't personally do clouds. It's not that, it's better or worse or whatever. It's just a financial thing. Cause you are going to pay money. I have gotten lucky and have only had one hard drive ever go bad on me in the last 15 years that ever mattered. And I say ever mattered because, instead of reusing a hard drive, once I've filled a hard drive, I put it into the backup master. And then I retire that entire hard drive with the files in place. And any files that are actively in use, like sessions I haven't finished, get put onto a new hard drive. And that's my new working hard drive. So instead of paying a subscription, I just pay for a physical piece. But I am a lot more susceptible to permanent loss than DK is. So, you know, choose the route that works best for you. Like I said, I've only had one hard drive that ever mattered go bad on me in the last 15 years. And the only reason it mattered is because we were actively working on sessions. And, you know, thankfully I had a backup system for myself. On my computer, I have three active backups. They're literally called Lou CPU backup, sessions, session backup, don't touch backup. And my don't touch is like my sample libraries and things of that nature. Like, just don't touch it. Don't mess up my archives, you know, whatever. But those three backups are on Carbon Copy Cloner. It's a free software, so you don't have to pay to do the backup cloning. But if you have the extra hard drives, like I said, my computer is a Hackintosh, so it has a bunch of slot bays for internals. I just throw a bunch of SSDs in those internals and use them as backups. And Carbon Copy Cloner is set to do a backup every 1 week of the main drives and then copy them onto the backups. So if the main drive goes down, I can load up the backup and call it a day.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's also a very expensive option.
So the reason why you explicitly said 7,200 RPM is because traditional disk drives are like, what, 56?
54.
5,400 RPM?
Yep.
And it's just higher, faster read and write speeds for 7,200. But even that is because if you're using an SSD for your driver where like your main drives are, and if you're just using a disk drive for archival reasons, I don't even think 7,200 is that important, actually, because read and write speeds, you're not
really
running sessions off of it. So just get the cheapest.
It's just if you're trying to copy files over and you're the type of person to monitor it, like I am, I'm extremely impatient. So that's kind of me being expensive because of me being ignorant to myself.
And I think like the difference, like first off, it has to, the packaging and the description of the item has to say 7,200 RPMs. That's not something that's like default, right? The default is slower, 5,400.
Yeah. If you go to Target and buy a hard drive, it's 54 by default.
Right. So make sure that it says 72 if you want that. I will say though, if you're running an SSD for your daily driver and then you have an archival drive or some backup drive, the speed doesn't necessarily matter because you're not running sessions off that. As we said, that being said, I also do the same thing. I do disk drives for all of my backups on purpose because of the recovery of that. And SSD. Yeah. Also like SSD drive, from what I understand, storage, just the way that memory is stored on SSD drives. I thought you were going to talk about like after 10 years of not even being plugged in once.
Oh yeah.
The memory degrades over time. So if you want to store files in a closet, store hard drives in a closet and possibly not touch it for 10 plus years, it has to be disk drives. SSDs degrade and do not hold memory unless it's regularly plugged in.
Yeah.
So if you're like are going to archive it into a closet, do not use SSDs. The files will degrade. Something about electrons that are beyond me. Basically like mini batteries that degrade over time. Spinning disk drives do not have that issue. You could store those forever.
Yeah,
And they are, as one, you said.
And I don't know if you can see it.
Yeah, it's also easier to recover, as you said.
Yeah.
If I were to be overkill, if I were to upgrade my hard drive systems now, I would get a RAID system.
Yeah.
But that's a conversation for another time. Maybe if you're nerdy, if you want to get into RAID, if you want extra... what is it called? Redundancy for your for your drive space. RAIDs are great. And I think that that is something that I'm at a point in my career where that would be worth it, possibly. I need to do research on it. I did some research on it a couple of years ago. I just haven't looked at it since. It's not like a super urgent thing, but that is something that I would probably look at sooner than later.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy because like it's not as simple as saying like, you know, and the reason it's such a big conversation by making it simple is it's not as simple as just saying copy this here. There's also copy formats. I know RAIDs work off of like, what is it? RAID 1, RAID 2, RAID 4 or something like that. There's different RAID formats and that's kind of the big issue. Like Yeah, the goal is to have redundancy backups and all that, but like depending on how you set it up depends what it's going to perform like. Because some people will make their main session drive the first drive in the RAID, and then depending how it's copying and moving information over, it will affect your performance.
Yeah, I mean you should look at RAID levels.
Yeah. That's what it like, is.
Yeah, like RAID 0 combines drives for maximum performance and speed. Data is split evenly across the disk. Downside, no redundancy. If one drive fails, you lose all your data. RAID 1 uses mirroring by writing an identical copy of data onto two or more drives. Downside, slower write speeds, and you only get half the total physical storage capacity. These are just some of the common ones. RAID 5 requires at least three drives. Data and parity or error correcting information are distributed across the array. It is highly efficient and survives the failure of a single drive without data loss. So I'd probably go RAID 5 based on these description.
Yeah.
RAID 10 requires at least four drives. It essentially pairs drives to mirror each other in a RAID 1 setup and then stripes the data across those mirrored pairs. RAID 0, this provides the best of both worlds for speed and robust protection.
Mm-hmm.
So RAID 5 minimum is kind of what I'm thinking if it's been a while. Anyway, but yeah, RAID systems are a bit more expensive and they need their own external casing and stuff. You need like a 4 to 8 bay drive system. Anyway,
some people even have a full dedicated rack.
Yeah, just for that. So that's something that I will consider in the future. It's just not that important right now. Maybe after the bubble of memory and storage dies, I might look into it again. Maybe not right now. It's not that important. I have Backblaze. The only problem with Backblaze is unless you pay an extra premium, which is a lot more expensive, any backup files, they only store for a year. So it's not good. Like if you want to archive a hard drive, like if you have a hard drive and then you archive it, you throw it into the closet, those files will expire on Backblaze after 1 year. So that's just something to consider. It's not a big deal because I'm mostly using it if I need something like you talked about where like it's active session and I need it now.
Yeah.
Right. But because I have so many archived hard drives of multiple terabytes on disk drives, it's usually not an issue unless everything burns in a fire.
Yeah.
I might get a fireproof safe actually now that I'm thinking about that. Just for my hard drives. That might be worth it.
They're not that expensive. I'm without saying too much, like I've really been considering one.
Also, to be fair, if I'm using FilePass or some sort of like Samply or Dropbox or anything like that, almost all of my sessions, and this is unrelated, not almost, every single one, 100% of all the sessions that I've been exporting and bouncing and completing, right? And marking off my to-do list for the past many years, I always bounce different mixes. I do the main mix, the instrumental, the acapella, the TV mix, and I always bounce stems. I don't care if the client doesn't do it, doesn't ask for them. So I also have, at the very least, if my family dies in a fire, God forbid, and my hard drives are gone and I'm weeping and wailing for my family, that's just getting dark.
At least I have stems.
At least I have stems. That I can, you know, take a look at. So that's something to consider.
You know, he didn't say, at least I have Lou to console me or anything. He said, no, at least I have stems.
Right. So that's crazy. Anyway, so that's something to consider too, like not just for your clients and for future-proofing their needs. Like part of the reason why I do that is because if they text me 5 years later, hey, like we sold this song for sync placement, and it's been 5 years, I'm not going to go back to an old hard drive. I'd rather just be like, all right, here's the cloud link from that time that we had it. I've had it all this time. Here you go. And I immediately send it off.
Yeah.
It makes it easy. And the good thing is, like, because we're not video editors, like, our file sizes, although they are big, are reasonable.
Very. Okay, quick note on that. On the tour, I took 3 terabytes of hard drive space just freely available for recording the shows. Each show was about 128 gigs worth of audio. The videographer took 50 gigs. Like he bought brand new box after box after box after box of those 2 terabyte LaCie rugged drives. I looked at this man. I was like, how many hard drives do you have left? At the end of the tour, he said 1.
Sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah. There are times where I'm really glad I didn't choose to do video.
Oh, we never talked about fan speed, fan noise with Max. Oh. No issue.
Dude, okay, so on the latest
there
models.
There is no fan noise on Max, yeah.
On the latest ones, no, not even on the Mac Mini running at full power. In fact, I still have yet to hit the ceiling on the Mac Mini M4. So, yeah,
don't worry about it. I've never heard my fan ever. That is not even a thought that I've had. Like, no. Worrying about the fan noise on a Mac is not real. All right, it's just not, yeah. Memory bandwidth, CPU or core count, clock speed, we talked about that. Oh, he talked about video editing too, and I'm going to be totally honest. I have no idea.
Actually,
I will say I have the standard M2 Mac Studio, and I do video editing, and I remember going from the maxed out to 2019 trash can Mac Pro to this, and it was just like all of a sudden my export speeds like went like 5 times faster.
Yeah. Even on, so I had to do a little video edit last month on the M4 Pro, MacBook Pro. Dude, an hour-long video took 30 minutes, which means it was writing at 2x speeds the whole way through. And that was with a fuck ton of audio processing. The video guy did color grading and all that stuff on my computer and everything. Dude, I've never seen it do such a detailed video that fast. And I'm sorry, man. I'm not a video guy, but the GPU processors on these things, like my Hackintosh at home, you know, like I said, still runs perfectly fine. If it wasn't for the Tor, I'd never look at another computer. I just genuinely don't need one. But when I saw how the GUI of these plugins look on the new GPUs and all that, it's so much smoother. Like, YouTube videos look all the same. I'm not going to lie. Like, they just, nothing changed on that. But we're talking about, like, looking at RTA plots and all that kind of stuff. Like, the fluidity of these new GPUs is really impressive.
Yeah. That's kind of it, really. So,
yeah, it used to be a bigger topic on like how to properly decide what specs you need and for this and that. Apple has made such a smooth computer now that we're talking M4 in a timeline where the M5 and I believe the M5 Pro is already out.
Yeah.
And that one is already, you know, outperforming the M4 quite a bit as well. Now, not a lot of people are jumping to it because of how good the M4 already is. You know, so, you know, if you want a MacBook Pro with the M5 Pro, you can pick one up. You can save some money and go with the M4 Pro. But I promise you right now, it is a little sad to see how little you have to think about it now. Like, a little bit of the fun of choosing a new computer has been taken away because of how damn good they are nowadays. So I'm not saying don't think about it. Think about your needs. If you want to run a fuck ton of plugins, get yourself, 32 gigs of RAM. If you're just creating music just for the sake of it and working with friends, you don't have a big processing library like from Acoustica or something like that, then, you know, 16 is going to be just fine. But realistically, the only questions you have to ask yourself now is M5, M5 Pro, 512 terabyte, and how much RAM. And to be honest, if you think you need a certain amount of RAM, just go the next step up. If you need a certain amount of hard drive space, just remember that externals exist and are significantly cheaper. And Thunderbolt write speeds are significantly faster than what you actually need for audio speeds. Your latency is no longer affected by your hard drive at the amount of data transfer speeds available through Thunderbolt. It used to be a bigger issue, especially with spinning disks. And yes, an internal SSD is going to be faster than an external SSD. But if you want to save some money, don't worry about going 2 terabytes on the laptop and get yourself 512 or 1 terabyte. Anything past that is just way too expensive and unreasonable from Apple. But, go ahead and rely on that external. I've been recording on externals with no issues for years. Nobody's ever said anything.
Yeah, I mean, run things on external. I don't know why anybody would do anything different.
Yeah,
that's kind of it for this episode, really. It's simple, it's straightforward. Don't overthink it. I think it's just fun because computers have been a bottleneck for audio production for a long time. And it's just interesting to see that in 95% of sessions, the computer is no longer a bottleneck. Like, we've, like, computers are well beyond what is necessary to run efficient audio sessions.
Welcome to the era where the only bottleneck is your ability to move fluidly with your creativity.
Right. We've been saying that for a while, but it's like more true than ever now.
Yeah. I love technology and the way it's evolving. I hate that I feel like I'm behind the curve by the time I buy something, but I love the fact that if there's something you're after, it's probably out there already, and it's probably a lot smoother than it's ever been.
All right.
Yeah.
That's kind of it for this episode. Is there anything else that you want to add, Lou?
Nope.
That's it. All right. I guess the only thing is like, excuse me. Macs might have an edge on privacy and data protection.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of been the viewpoint ever since. And I know everybody felt a certain way about this, but what was it? I forget what shooting happened. They're like, oh, it was an iPhone. So the FBI reached out to Apple to unlock the phone so they could look through it. And Apple said, no, goes against our privacy policy. So I had to say it. Yeah, they defended technically somebody that you would want to have information on. But if they were to allow it for one person, they'd have to start allowing it for everybody. So they are very strict about their privacy policies.
Yeah. I mean, not like everybody has such high, you know, high...
intent for violence?
No, I was going to say like... what is that called? Like important big deal sessions with big deal artists.
Yeah.
Right? Where it's like a leak could lose millions of dollars. Like, most people aren't in a situation like that. But just something to consider as well. I don't know how much you consider that. But anyway, that's it. Thank you so much for listening. If you want more specific feedback and tips and tricks on mixing and mastering and production, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive for an exclusive episode, an extra exclusive episode every single week alongside the backlog of almost near 300 exclusive episodes that have been released to this day and an ad-free episode of this show every week. So if you hate to hear the ads and you hate hearing about Home Depot or whatever the hell is going on, go to mixmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. And it's one of the only ways that we make any sort of financial benefit from this. Like, we are careful with our sponsors and don't take on a lot of endorsements. And they're very thoughtful and I have very strong moral and ethics. Yeah, that's one of the only ways that we make money from this show. So we appreciate any sign. It's $4 a month for $4 a month to get access to our exclusive episodes and ad-free episodes of the podcast. Less than a cup of coffee. It's literally less than a cup of coffee. On that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. You already love the Mixing Music Podcast, but what if I told you that there are over 250 exclusive episodes just waiting for you? That's right. On our Patreon, you get ad-free technical deep dives every single week on mixing, mastering, and production. If you want more knowledge, more techniques, and zero fluff, head to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start leveling up your skills today.